In 1978, Bob Seger made a song raging against modern day trends, claiming he wanted some old shit. In the 42 years since, this song and its references have become themselves old shit. We reboot movies all the time. RoboCop got a terrible modern adaptation. You've seen modern takes on things that weren't even popular. They remade The Grudge, Hitman, Doom. And I can think of a couple songs covered that updated a reference. Britney Spears changed shirt to skirt. The Ataris changed Deadheads to Black Flag. But my friends, old-time rock and roll, it needs some work. And luckily for us all, I have lots of free time. I got a lot of those compact discs. I know you like your Spotify playlist. Modern music shakes me to my core. I like that old-time rock and roll. Don't you play me that. Hearing Migos is a fucking chore. I like that old time rock and roll.
Rock and roll soothes my soul. Days of old. Rock and roll.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the program. We will not be able to do a live show next week, so we figured the best alternative would be a supersized episode this week. I hope you enjoy it.
Strangely, we like all the same pop culture bullshit that you like.
Did Matt Damon go here?
Oh, Matty boy, fuck yeah! Matt Damon, before he came to me, he was a no-name actor from New England. He was nothing. He was 100 pounds soaking wet.
You sure we're talking about the same Matt Damon?
Hell yeah, Matt Damon.
Huh. Okay. Yeah, you say it.
Rule number one, no phones till you graduate.
Okay, I run an empire, so unfortunately I need
okay,
my...
Okay, fine. You know what I'll do? I just call Mr. Vanderbilt and I'll tell him, oh, the phone policy wasn't working for him. It wasn't to his liking.
I know what you're gonna do with this.
You're gonna make calls to Hollywood. You're gonna say, hello, Hollywood. Ron's school's too tough for me. I need more drugs. No. Yeah, you're gonna say, oh, I'm Kevin Hart. I need more caviar and champagne.
I just want to talk to my employees.
That's fine, but I'm still keeping it.
Okay.
WFOD!
Here he is again with another one of his amazing animal facts. Drunk!
Wombat poop is cube-shaped.
Okay, our first guest this week is an acclaimed screenwriter whose latest offering is a 10-part action comedy series starring Kevin Hart entitled Die Hard. Stream the first 3 episodes now on the Quibi app. Tripper Clancy is on the program. Hi, Tripper.
Hey, how's it going? Nice to meet you guys.
Thanks for doing this. We appreciate your time. It seems like you probably got a lot going on right now with the release of Die Hard.
Yeah. It's always fun when something comes out to see how the response is. It's been cool.
I guess that's a good problem to have, is being too busy, right?
Absolutely, especially during a time of corona.
Right. Has this affected you much at all? I mean, you just kind of go out in your backyard and write all day, don't you?
I'm literally in the backyard writing right now.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. It affected us a little bit on Die Hard because COVID hit really when we began post.
Oh.
We wrapped production right before this. And so really for Eric and our director and the editors, they had to do almost all of post-production virtually. which is really tricky because you're just there. That's just one of those parts of the process. You want to be in the same room as people. And so I think, you know, I think the show turned out really well. It's one of those, you can't put a disclaimer on it that says, oh, by the way, we didn't get to do post-production like usual right. in the same room. Like you can't.
I mean, I guess you could
you know,
do
you
that.
Put a caveat on it. You could, I guess. Yeah. no one would care.
How did this project come about? How did somebody bring the idea to you?
Yeah, it was Kevin's idea, and he brought it to Katzenberg at Quibi, and he set it up. He wanted to play a version of himself that wants to be an action star, and you know, he kind of wanted to spoof something of a James Bond type of movie. And when I came on board, I had just recently written another show for Quibi called Varsity Blues, which is a reboot of the movie from the late 90s.
Oh, Tripper, you're kidding. You're doing Varsity Blues?
I'm doing Varsity Blues, but we unfortunately have not had a chance to shoot it because our production got halted by COVID. So I just turned in those scripts for Varsity Blues, and my execs at Quibi, you know, told me about this idea, and I talked to Kevin, and I had this idea. I said, you know, if we think about it kind of literally, it could be funny. Like, how does Kevin, as you know, the world's biggest comedic actor, how would he become an action star? Like, he's typecast. If no one would let him do that, which is crazy because he's such a big star. And yeah. So I had this idea. I said, well, what if there's one director that would let him do it, but only if he attended an action star school? And that's kind of how the concept was born. And then what if John Travolta played that coach of the action star school and he's a total lunatic?
You brought back my favorite actor, which is 90s bad guy Travolta, which you've done the world
so
a great
he's
service.
So good. I grew up as a huge Travolta fan, and you know, it's, he's done some amazing movies. He's done some haven't fared as well. And when he came on board, I just thought this is going to be a character that, like, I think will go, I hope will go like in that list of like great Travolta roles. Cause there's a lot of them already on that list. And I just wanted Die Hard to be like one more on that list for him. Cause he brings so much to the table. It's amazing.
So the question that I'm sure you've been asked 100 times during your press tour here. Okay. Now Kevin Hart is a fictionalized version of Kevin Hart. Josh Hartnett makes an appearance as a fictionalized Josh Hartnett, but John Travolta plays a character named Ron Wilcox. So does John Travolta exist in this fictional world?
I played with a joke once that like that he gets confused for John Travolta, like when he's at the grocery store.
Oh, you did like the Ocean's 13?
So yeah, exactly. So I would say yes, John Travolta does exist within the cinematic universe of Die Hard, but he has not attended Ron Wilcox's action star school yet. I'll say that. that could be a spinoff. It's just Ron Wilcox teaching John Travolta.
So this Varsity Blues, Tripper, is it just a remake? Is it a sequel? Are people coming back, or do we not know yet?
I can't tell you contractually if anyone's coming back, but I will say it's set in present day in small town Texas. I grew up in Texas, and I was in high school in Texas when Varsity Blues came out. So I was very familiar with that world. And so it's a whole new cast of characters, but set in West Canaan, Texas, at present day. And there is the opportunity for a couple of old familiar faces to be in the show. But I don't want to give anything away because
right.
We still haven't shot the show yet, so I don't want to get ahead of myself.
I get it. So do you write fast or have people just taken? Because, I mean, if you look at your IMDb and, like, the list of things that are coming out, I mean, is it a situation where you've been writing for a long time and somebody just said, what else does Stuber Guy got? Or do you just write really fast?
Yeah, both. I write really fast. And what happens a lot of times in the career of a screenwriter is the first few jobs you have, you're not getting the cream of the crop. You're not being tasked with writing a Marvel movie that's going to get made or a bestseller that you know is going to happen. My first few projects were a lot of fun to write, but in hindsight, they were things that probably had a very difficult chance of ever getting made.
Right.
And so that's why if you look at my IMDb, it's got several projects that will probably never, ever get made, but they had a chance. And I think as I do more of it, I become a better writer and people start, you know, doors open for better possibilities and better opportunities for me to write. You know, if I'm writing something that Kevin Hart's attached to, the odds of it getting made are pretty good.
Yeah.
As a screenwriter, that you try to just put yourself in a position to write those types of projects that have a good chance of getting a green light.
So the show is Die Hard. The first three episodes are available now on Quibi. You get the app and you can cast that to TVs now, which this should be viewed on a TV. I know that's not what they want you to say, but it's big, Tripper. You should see it.
It's big. And the thing people don't realize about Quibi shows is we have a full crew. We have a super talented DP, and our stunt coordinator worked on Ant-Man. So it's like the scale of this, even though it's primarily intended for the phone.
Yeah.
The fact that you can cast it through your TV screen, we could play Die Hard on a big screen in a movie theater. It's the quality is that good. So
is it weird writing in those 7-minute segments, or do you not really think about that? Do you just kind of write it and then let them figure it out? Or do you have that in mind that, man, I gotta have a hook here in like 7 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. I learned quickly that like, there's no one else that's going to think about it. It's up to me to make sure it happens. I actually had finished the script for Varsity Blues before Die Hard, and I learned a lot on Varsity Blues about the structure of a Quibi show. So when I came on to Die Hard to take Kevin's story and turn it into a Quibi show, I was already ahead of the game because I knew I wanted to tell a full 80-minute story that could work like a movie, but I wanted really good cliffhangers every 7 or 8 minutes.
Right.
And so, yeah, when you're writing the script, when you're on page 5 of a episode, you're already starting to think about how I can get to that cliffhanger and wrap this episode up in a really compelling way. In some ways, it's terrifying, but it's also kind of liberating.
Right. Well, Tripper, we appreciate your time. Guys, check out Die Hard. It's on the Quibi app now. Tripper, you come back when Varsity Blues comes out. We talk about that.
Will do. Thanks so much for having me.
I dreamed of becoming an action hero.
Now, Jeff, people are just raving about this new movie of yours.
You are working with Dwayne The Rock Johnson, playing his comedy sidekick again.
Here's my question. Why can't I be an action star? Oh, in my car. In my car. No, I'm serious. I don't know why you're laughing. I'm being very serious. Back up.
Yep.
Tell me what I am and what I'm not. This is my time to shine.
Welcome to Ron Wilcox Action Star School. I'm Ron Wilcox.
Rule number one, you are forbidden from visiting the outside world. You'll stay here.
Okay, I get it. Shit.
And no fucking on the premises. No anal, no blowjobs, no nothing.
Who else is here?
Just me.
Live.
Internet radio.
Online and on your mobile device.
Strangelabel.com.
Hi, I'm Frank from Frank's Discount Grocers. A lot of people have been asking us what our mask policy is. After giving it some thought, we've made what we think is the right decision. People who don't wear masks are awful, entitled pieces of garbage. And people who do wear masks? They are awful, entitled pieces of garbage. Our policy for the foreseeable future is that you just don't come here. Because we'd like to enjoy our summer without anyone fucking it up for us. Frank's Discount Grocer, where price matters.
WFOD starts now.
You trying to prove a point? You proved it, bro. We'll do whatever it takes to be part of your group. Just please, please, don't make us live in that place.
My wallet.
Oh man, it's great to be doing the show again, Travis. Here we are. We're doing the show. It's happening.
How long have you been? How long have we been using the soundboard version of the intro?
Travis, I do that live.
You do?
I do it live. I do some remixing.
Huh.
You don't like it?
Well, might be time to retire it.
Travis, I've accumulated a whole bunch, though. I'm on, like, my third page now.
Every time I listen to the opening before we go live, it feels like I heard it last week. With Timmy, and You Ain't a Bird Man.
What about this one, Jeremy? That one's new.
Oh, that's a new one. Maybe the order? Maybe start from page 3 and go to page 1? Maybe that would make a difference?
Jarvis, I'm having fun, okay? That's ultimately what we're here for, right?
That's what it's all about, is having a good time.
Guys, Matt is here as well. Hello, Matt.
Hi.
We're looking forward. Guys, after the break, we're going to be talking to actor Lou Temple. He has a new project out. We're going to talk to him all about it.
The prolific Lou Temple. That guy's got an IMDb page for days.
Travis, did you see the news about Bridger? Bridger, the 6-year-old boy who saved his 4-year-old sister.
Saved his sister from the dog.
Travis,
He got bit in the face.
Goddamn world, Travis. I'll tell you what, this 6-year-old boy got 90 stitches in his face. And
what
I'm telling you,
what was the quote from that boy? He said,
"Well, if somebody's got to die, it should be me.
It should be me and not my little 2-year-old or 3-year-old sister."
No, Travis, the kid, the hero.
Yeah, and he's 6 years old and he thought to put himself in front of his sister to, like, take the danger.
Travis, is he a racist?
For, like, a week, Twitter has been nothing but positive. I mean, like, Captain America, that piece of shit, he jumped up and sent Bridger a video, and he's like, "Hey, Bridger, you did good." And then Robert Downey Jr. did, and Thor did, and Spider-Man.
Yeah, sound pretty familiar.
Chris invited him. He was going to send him a shield.
Sounded pretty familiar, guys.
It sounds really familiar, Matt. And this whole time, I'm just going, "Oh, fuck. What are they going to do to this kid?
When does the hammer drop?"
And that's no way to live, Travis. This poor kid should just be a hero, and
he's a hero.
I mean, like, even if his parents end up being racist, which they probably will, something's going to happen. They're going to find some dirt on, like, this kid has, like a shithead uncle or something. I know there's somebody
like
looking right
cousin.
Now.
Did something wrong, but because if you watch that video where Chris Evans sends him that video, and you see that kid is like dressed up in his Captain America costume in a hammock with the little sister that he saved, it brought a tear to my eye.
Oh yeah,
like,
Travis.
Oh my God.
You in the back of your mind, you're thinking, "Oh no."
I remember
what
a certain kid.
What are they going to do to this kid?
That got invited to a certain Avengers premiere.
Oh no.
Matt, what are they going to do to this kid? Can the story go away before we got to get him out of the headlines? Like, we got to make people stop making videos. Robert Downey Jr. is making videos now. We got to get this kid clear before it turns.
I just want proof this week that Chris Evans sent him that Captain America shield, because you know what? He just went radio silent on the kid that he promised to bring to the Avengers
premiere. He reneges, Travis. It's what he does, that Chris Evans.
Yeah,
he's no good.
Everybody calls Chris Evans a hero. They say, "Oh, look at what Chris Evans did for this wonderful little boy." And then Chris Evans just goes radio silent on the whole topic, never follows through, and everybody forgets about it.
I feel like we need to do we need to block news reports who are still doing stories about him. We need to somehow make him go away. Like, just
to do what Egypt did when they had their uprising and just shut off certain parts of the internet.
And I mean, the story's great. Now let's move on.
Yeah, take before the spotlight they, off this brave little boy.
Before some piece of shit finds something on poor Bridger, Travis, we got to work it out. We saw plenty of Bridger. I'll tell you what, I did not see a lot about the weird FedEx impostor guy who shot that judge's family.
Did you hear the follow-up on this now?
Okay, it was a lone wolf, Travis. He was a men's
just like
right
Lee Harvey Oswald, the same kind of lone wolf.
What, Travis? You suspect foul play?
This motherfucker was a secret cell, like mind controlled Jeffrey Epstein wrapped up in the deep state kind of thing. They needed to take this judge out somehow, and they activated this fucking crazy lawyer guy to go dress up as a FedEx employee.
Well, Travis, I mean, like, are we even sure it was him, or is he just a patsy? We're just saying
the patsy.
I mean, nobody did he kill himself like Epstein killed himself?
Where is the doorbell cam that shows the picture of the guy so they can positively identify him? Because as far as I know, tragically, the son was killed and the husband is in critical condition.
Right. So he knocked on the door.
Who's identifying this person?
And the husband answered the door, be like, oh, FedEx. And then he shot the husband. And then the son, the 20-year-old son was like, wait, is there somebody shooting people at the front door? I should go look. And he went and looked in and they killed him. And the judge lady, Judge Salas, she was assigned to a Deutsche Bank Epstein money laundering thing 4 days prior. And they're saying, it's just a coincidence.
Yeah. Really? There seems to be a lot of coincidences wrapped up in the whole Epstein thing, you know? And if I say, if there's one coincidence, sure, fine. But dozens of coincidences wrapped up in this thing ceases to be a coincidence. Originally it was, we're looking for this guy, but we don't know what he looks like. We don't know who he is. We're hoping that maybe there's some security footage from around the neighborhood that'll point us in the right direction. Then there was nothing. There was no news whatsoever. And then miraculously, all of a sudden they said, oh, hey guys, we found this lawyer. He killed himself.
So it was probably him, right?
Case closed. And then, after that news came out, and they're like, God, we'll never know the motive. Well, now they're digging deep into this, and they're saying that, oh, this lawyer guy, he was with a gal, she broke up with him, he got bitter at women, then he became one of those men's rights guys, and he just went off the deep end and killed these people.
When you say he became one of those men's rights guys, what are these men's rights guys? Travis? Is that a men's right thing? Or
yeah, it's the anti-equality, like, oh, you know, it's all about the women and the Me Too movement, but what about men's rights?
Right. It's the people who think they've become the minority.
It's like the all lives matter, but like the sexist version?
It's exactly that.
Oh, okay.
All of a sudden, this story comes out. They find out about this guy. I don't know how they found him. They'd never released any footage, anything. They just said, oh, we found him. Don't worry about it. He's dead. Self-inflicted gunshot wound. Case closed. But then why did he go there, kill those two people? Obviously, he must have had it out for the judge and not her family.
So he's a men's rights man that went and killed two men and didn't kill the woman.
Right, exactly. And why would he kill them? Like, obviously, if that was the case, he was killing them to hurt her. But he didn't live long enough to see her being hurt. So there was no satisfaction there. So it makes literally zero sense.
Well, yeah, but obviously they're going to reassign her cases because she's mourning. So, like, you know, the next judge, he'll know what's up.
Until some random barista blows up the courthouse, you know, dressed up like a Pizza Hut delivery guy, you know, and then it comes out that he was some weird Fortnite player who just, that's all he did was play Fortnite all the time. And then some gal over Fortnite broke his heart. So he decided to blow up a courthouse.
It just,
willy-nilly.
You know, had something to do with this big money laundering thing. But I mean, it's all coincidences. It's just
a
lot of lone wolves have some killing to do, Travis. A
lot of weird lone wolves.
Even during
a lot of weird suicides,
damn
no sense.
Pandemic, the killings, they got to happen. I mean, ain't no rest when you're wicked.
Listen, so far they haven't been able to take care of Ghislaine Maxwell, so they had to take out this judge. I don't think this is the end of this. There's lots of killing to do.
Travis, we got a lot of killing to do.
Every goddamn person on the road is driving like a maniac now. They're driving crazier than usual. I think that everybody just wants to feel something, Travis.
People are going crazy.
Everybody right now in stores are yelling at each other, either because they want to wear a mask or they don't want to wear a mask, or there's a line or there's not a line, and everybody's cutting each other.
They're going to open schools, or they're not going to open schools, or they can go to the bar, or they can't go to the bar.
Yeah, I know. And then if they're opening schools, like, oh, the kids have to wear a mask if they're going to be in school. They're not going to. Yeah, it's there's so much. There's so much that's, you know, splits everybody up right now, and it's all
everything.
It's all based in political. Like, it was kind of funny. Me and the guys from the Lotus Cast, Joe, Dave, we're all have followed this group in Medway, Massachusetts, which is where we used to do the show. And it's one of those, like, local, you know, towny Facebook groups where,
oh, like that white supremacist group you were telling me about.
Yeah, exactly. And in this group, like, it's one of those stupid things, like, oh, I heard a fire, or, you know, I heard, is it gunshots? What am I hearing? You know, and it's like, it's firecrackers or whatever. It's all these people that are just always, you know, hypersensitive. Well, there was a lady who her son ended up in text messages, and they're in high school, called somebody the N-word, and one of the girls, there was a young high school black girl who has a copy of the text message, and she posted it on this Facebook group. And I'm telling you, the whole town is in disarray. Like, they've like thousands of members in this group. I think there's 3,500 members of this group. They've now paused the Facebook group. Like, they said, you know what, we're taking a break, because what would happen is, you know, the girl posted the pictures and then she took it down because of threats and she was afraid for her life. And then another Facebook post gets put up. Administrators take that down. And then another post comes up. And they're all getting like hundreds of comments within hours. The mother of this son said, like, oh, I'm half Asian, so there's no way that I or him could be racist because we're half Asian. And, like, I have black friends. That's what she said in one of her posts.
Oh, she said, I have black friends?
She said, I have black friends.
Oh.
And they said, we're putting this Facebook group on a timeout until we can discuss the rules going forward. But the problem is once they open the comments up, there's going to be somebody that immediately posts, you know, oh, I can't believe how many racist people there are in Medway. And then the debate starts back up where people are like, oh, I'd love to know what they said that was racist before. You know, nobody was racist. And then the people that are dismissing it, like, oh, this isn't a place for that. And don't bring politics into it, as if racism is some sort of political thing. And it just, like, it just turns into
now the admins of this Facebook page are going to censor everything we say.
100%,
well,
man.
I love it.
It's in bad shape. The Facebook group.
The right claims
normally from now on
that there is no racism, and the left claims that everyone is racist, and it's probably somewhere in the middle. Where of course there's racism. There's people obviously who are shitty. But it's probably not everybody's racist.
If you're not an ally, you're a racist.
Right.
It is everything. It is your anti-protest or your for protest. It's your anti-cop or your for cops. It's literally every single town. My hometown newspaper posts something on Facebook about the coronavirus. It's anti, there's no such thing, and the flu's more. And then the other people are like, just wear your mask, you fucking asshole. You know, it's just, every single thing now is an us versus them. If you have a differing opinion, well, then you must be an awful person. And there's just, it's gotten so far. We've been saying this for years now, but it's gotten so far beyond there being any gray area at all. You can't be in the middle. You're either for us or you're against us. I found myself looking at, and I don't know why I do it, but when I look at these comments on the newspaper's posts, I find myself hating all of them. I just right. like no matter what side they're on, because it's like you're so ridiculous. You're arguing with strangers on the internet about what they believe, and they don't like what you. I don't know how you.
Well,
fix this
there's no way to fix it because nobody's willing to have a conversation or a dialogue about anything. Like right. immediately you get attacked. So it's like, well, I don't understand what that means, or why would that be a thing? And then if you question it, you're automatically the villain. Right. And I think that is a big problem that we have. It's like we can agree that there's racism, and we can agree that people don't understand systematic racism, but instead of saying, well, you just don't understand it, you're a fucking asshole or you're a piece of shit, why don't you take a second and say, hey, wait a minute, here's my perspective, or here's some thoughts on that.
And that would take the other person to be willing to listen.
Just as equally, yeah, ready to listen.
And yeah, I mean, it's on both sides that's wrong. It's like you have to be ready to listen to somebody else's perspective, even if you don't end up agreeing with them. And the person that has your differing perspective can't just automatically say you're an asshole because you don't think what I think. There has to be more discussion. People have to listen more than just to be regurgitating whatever bullshit is in their brain every time something comes up. And I just... short of a plague, like a real plague. I mean, I know that squirrel had the bubonic plague in it out west. I mean, short of that squirrel starting to bite people, I think we're fucked.
Travis, how are we going to protect Bridger from all of this? You better fucking believe, Travis. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but it's turning on him because...
Yeah. One of these sides is coming after him.
We don't have heroes anymore. No. There's no such thing. Fucking Trader Joe's is racist now, Travis.
Trader Jose's.
You live long enough to see yourself become the villain. So we got to worry about Bridger. And guys, I'm telling you, erase Bridger from your mind. Get him out now while you still can, while he's still pure. Because it's not going to end well for him. The poor guy, and people will be shitting on him and making fun of his stitches.
Yeah, you put that poor Bridger. You put him in your heart. You close the top and you lock it up.
So
throw away the key.
Trader Joe's, they had taco shells that said Trader Jose's, and somebody put up a petition. They said, "Fucking Trader Joe's, you change this shit." You're just Joe. Why are you appropriating other people's cultures with your shitty taco shells?
Right. And the thing about that is, you know, I mean, Jose is just Joe in Mexico, right? Just, like, I mean, isn't that just the thing?
Just a fun little thing, guys.
Just a fun little thing. I mean, to be like, hey, look.
We weren't trying to be culturally insensitive. We were just not trying to sell you taco shells.
Absolutely. Come buy your delicious Trader Joe's taco shells.
Nobody's safe, Travis.
Nobody is safe.
But at the same time, you could just stay in your house and shut off your internet and just wait for this whole thing to pan out, right?
I mean, that seems like the smart thing to do. Just sit down and binge like 7 seasons of Guy's Grocery Games and everything will be fine.
Lou, how's it going, man?
Hey, hello.
Charles, we didn't take a break. Lou's here.
We don't need a break then.
We don't need a break.
Nervous man of considerable wealth. You know Epstein didn't kill himself. You know Epstein didn't kill himself.
You're listening to StrangeLabel.com. Viva La Label.
Look, Phil, be honest with me. If I go to hell, what's going to happen to me?
Well, it's different for everyone. There's burning, of course, a lot of burning options. And sometimes they come up with clever ideas like making you crawl naked through broken glass or jamming a red hot poker up your behind, things like that.
Jesus.
Oh, I almost forgot this one. They stick you in a room full of horny demons with cocks the size of baseball bats. That one's very popular.
Popular for who?
Well, the demons seem to like it.
Shit.
Hey, what it is, man? It's your boy T-Pain, and this is
WFOD!
I think we're ready to reopen the park.
This is the sixth time now, and every time fuck-ups, find a way.
Oh, but this time it's different. Welcome to Jurassic Park.
You monster, what have you done?
This just, looks like a Caesar's palace. Where's the dinosaurs?
Oh, don't you worry about that. We have them, you bet. But we've abandoned the whole zoo dynamic. That has failed, like you said, like 5 times now. Now we're rebranding and branching out into a whole new venture into the world of competitive sports.
So they race?
Yeah, they race, they fight. People gamble on all kinds of shit.
And this is all safe?
Well, we'd like to think so. I mean, shit, we have all the electric fences and stuff we always do. It's just hard to keep dusting off the same flawed logic without changing something.
You didn't make new super hybrid predator dinosaurs again, did you?
Oh, fucking course we did. Are you shitting me? But it's different this time. They're racing. Trust me.
Loud and dark. Once again, WFOD. Wheelbarrow full of dicks.
Guys, welcome back. Our guest is an actor who you may know from The Walking Dead or his four guest appearances on Walker, Texas Ranger. His latest offering is a horror comedy called Limbo, available on DVD and video on demand August 8th. Lou Temple is on the program.
Lou, how are you doing, man?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. Do you hear me okay?
I do. You sound great. I see you too. I'll tell you what, when you pop up in movies and TV and stuff, you always got something different going on with your facial hair. Do you like grow that shit in like a day or two? Is that like one of your many talents?
I do. It's like, you remember those little figures that you had, the paper dolls, and you could put different items on them? And so I have a mustache closet that... avails itself to me, and I'm able to kind of find my daily facial hair. So today is today's a mediocre day, an average day. But thank you for noticing. Absolutely, yeah.
Is that part of wrapping yourself up into a character, Lou? Do they give you kind of carte blanche for certain characters where they say, hey, do whatever you want with that facial hair, however you feel like you can get into this character that we have for you, go ahead and do it?
Yeah, so oftentimes nowadays they leave that to you. In fact, for the longest time, post Walking Dead, I was trying to remove myself from the mustache that Axel had, the Waxel, and and everybody wanted it. It's the its reputation preceded me. And so I'm not saying it was like Tom Selleck, but yeah, you kind of get to be that guy. Hey, we'd like you to have some growth. There's also a laziness to it, I've found, because we have to do less makeup, and it adds to the character, and so many men are wearing facial hair these days, and it if you've got it, it's serviceable, that's for sure. And with today's budgets, they're not always going to put one on you, and sometimes, let's be honest, they don't always look that great. You know, we've seen Civil War films where the beards are a little false. So yeah, they like you to have it. So if you've got it, it's going to play typically. It was, when I was doing The Walking Dead, or when I got cast originally, I was doing The Lone Ranger for Disney. And I had a big handlebar mustache. I was playing a Texas Ranger. And I told them, I'm still shooting. I can make the schedule work, but I can't change the wardrobe or the facial hair. They're like, and The Walking Dead was like, no, we love the mustache. And I was thinking, yeah, you say that now, but I'm going to show up on set. And you're going to ask me to shave. I've seen it happen. But they were cool with it, and it ended up playing really well. So sometimes it serves you with the facial hair. And, it is or it isn't. It's been seldom that I've shown up with a beard or a mustache and they said, hey, could you shave it?
I guess it's easier to shave it than to grow a new one, right? So you might as well show up with it and see what they say.
The truth.
Hey, Lou, could you shut off your video? Because we're having connection issues.
No problem. Do that. Yeah.
Yeah, you're cutting out a lot. And cool. Thank you.
Okay.
I'm sorry. What were you saying?
Now I don't have facial hair, or I do.
Schrodinger's cat.
I could be anything. It's left up to your wildest imagination. No problem.
So this Limbo. It's coming out August 8th on video on demand and DVD. You're the main character. Limbo. It's like a heaven and hell thing. So he goes.
Yeah, I kind of like to reference it as if, it's the 12 angry men of your soul, and you're being judged by God's prosecuting attorney and Satan's defender, or actually it's the other way around. But and so you're on trial to see which way it's going to go, literally north or south. And what's great about this film is that it has a twist, and I'm hopeful that we pull it off and you don't see it coming. And I think the twist is a great psychological suspense story.
I actually did not see it coming. I usually see it coming.
Oh, good.
Not to brag, good. Lou. I usually see it coming, but this time I did not.
Wow, that's great. I'm very pleased. And thank you so much for watching it and reviewing it. We're very excited for it. It's a challenging movie because we were confined in a soundstage for a lot of that movie, and to make one space where you've got three talking heads, so to speak, keeping the balls in the air is always a challenge. And then to go back outside and create the reality world as opposed to the ether world of Limbo, and to have sort of a different emotional essence to each of those worlds. It was some work, but I'm really proud of how we were able to accomplish it.
Throughout it, I was kind of, it made me think that maybe it was originally written as a play, because that's kind of how it played out to me. I don't know if...
Yeah, good perception. You know, that's that. And I feel like when we talked about it, and this is my fourth project with Mark Young, the writer-director, he referenced the idea that he wanted to give it a sense of stagecraft worthiness, in that the words were going to carry a lot of the action. But yeah, you're right. As a matter of fact, it smacks of being a stage play for sure. That being said, I think that if we can engage the audience with you know, the conversation, that's the task at hand,
right,
that we're able to kind of keep the cinema moving. And and you know, like I said, that was a challenge, but I was really excited to throw in. And then the other thing, frankly, just, you know, speaking of a stage play, typically you rehearse it quite a bit, and we didn't have that luxury because we were kind of small. So
yeah,
Mark and Shannon McCaney and the casting director did a good job of bringing players in who were going to bring taco shells for the bean dip guys from Trader Joe. These actors are all very accomplished, and they bring something to the party, is what we're saying here. And they would like to have rehearsal, but they don't require it. So and Mark understood that, and those were the cats he invited in.
So you said this is the fourth time you've worked with this writer director. Was this part written for you? Did he have you in mind?
He did. And when I first read the script, of course I read it, and I'm like, oh, of course, you know, I mean, you never want to take for granted that that's the case.
Yeah.
So I initially said, well, I like this Balthazar character. I like this attorney, this, you know, long in the tooth, worn out, cynical guy. And we talked about it for a while, and he said, you know, my instinct is to go younger with this character and to have an element of teen angst into him, a guy that's got some father issues, you know? And I think that was really smart. I think that worked because we also talked about using Richard in that role, Richard Riley, who played Phil Anemus.
Man, that guy's great, isn't he?
He's in everything. He's amazing. He's adorable.
I know him primarily as the jump to conclusions Matt guy from Office Space.
Exactly. You know him from so many things. You're like, oh, right. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. And he really is such a charming and endearing person. And then his character is very much, too. We have this scene, and he really moved me. You know, he's a guy with all this hope for no particular reason, and I'm a guy who has very little hope and yet has every reason to have hope, as you know, yeah, as a mortal human being. And he was great. And so, but yeah, Mark, he did design Jimmy Boyle for me. And so that was great, you know, and really great opportunity. I don't get to do that quite as often with that full type of character arc. And I had a beard in that one, guys. In case
we are going to be keeping tabs now on the beard.
The facial hair, yeah.
See, Lou, you're one of those guys that you pop up all the time. Like, if you're flipping channels, you can find you in like four or five things at all times. And so it's fun to talk to guys like you, because then when I see you, I'd be like, hey, I know that guy.
That is fun. You know where it's more fun? It's fun when you go to your mailbox. And CBS has run Walker, Texas Ranger for a while.
Lou, you were on Walker, Texas Ranger four different times as four different people.
I know. You know, so that speaks to a time and a place, because it was in the day, or at least in CBS for Walker, that they did that. And I didn't know. Yeah, I was cutting my teeth there, by the way. I was right where I started. I didn't know any different. I don't know if other networks were doing that with their guest stars, but that was just old hat for me. And they would put different hair on me or different hat. Sometimes just a hat. And it would be okay. And we're not talking like in the 1960s. I mean, Jesus, this was in the 90s. And so I never thought twice about it. And, you know, people bring it up because that you would no more do that today. That'd be so taboo today that you'd run. You might play two different characters in the same show. Oddly, Garrett Dillahunt did that in Deadwood, I remember.
That was
weird. You wouldn't do that.
That was jarring. Like, Garrett Dillahunt coming back as a different character in Deadwood was jarring.
Yeah, right?
Well, yeah, and I mean, that's like what? They did like 3 seasons of 10 episodes. I mean, Walker, Texas Ranger did like 30-episode seasons in the 90s, I would imagine. So
yeah.
it's spaced out pretty good, I would imagine.
It's like the Superman Clark Kent thing, right? Like nowadays, if you created a character, you wouldn't be like, oh, his secret identity is a pair of glasses, right? Like, so I picture Lou back in Walker, Texas Rangers Day being like, man, we really liked working with that guy. What can we cast him as? I don't know. Throw a pair of sunglasses on him and call him somebody else.
And to the point where my last job on that show, it was nearing the end. And they, believe me, they were nearing the end. That shark tank, I mean, the shark had died. So Chuck Norris actually had to investigate my death, which, you know, that's how thin their storylines were getting. And I got killed by Frank Stallone, Sylvester Stallone's brother.
Chuck avenged you, though, didn't he, Lou? I mean, he went and kicked that guy right in the face.
He did. Roundhouse. Right. Yep. It's funny because my grandfather would watch that show, and every time, of course, that show is built around physical contact. You know, it's a martial arts, not really a gunplay show. You'd square up with Chuck and he'd take you out. And my granddad would watch it with his friends and get so frustrated because I'd get beat up. You know that kick is coming and you fall for it every time. And I'm like, all right, granddad, that's kind of the way it's supposed to go. I know, but you don't even get a punch in and all my friends are making fun of me how you fight. And I'm like, oh, my God. And that's when I started to realize, yeah, Middle America loves this show.
The other yous knew that kick was coming. I mean, to the fourth iteration of you being on the show, that guy didn't know that the kick was coming.
Had no idea that Chuck Norris could complete that, you know, that move. He didn't see it coming. That's the
one truth. One good kick while he's wearing jeans just takes out the bad guy at the end of the episode every time.
Yeah, the whole.
I loved Walker, Texas Ranger as a kid.
It was a lot of fun. You know, as many jokes are made, and they're all fun. Chuck was a great guy. In other words, so he was like this athlete. He would show up in the morning. Okay, guys, let's have a really good show. You guys need anything, let me know. I'm not really that good at this, but you guys are, and I'm just going to try to, you know, stay out of your way. I mean, he was really supportive and actually really cool, I have to say. And, man, he was the front of that show, and it was the only reason any of us were getting to work. And I had a good time on that show. I learned to do stunts because those guys were all stunt guys. I got to work with the $6 Million Man. I did an episode with Lee Majors, which was super cool. He wasn't the $6 Million Man when I did it, but, he, you know, in my mind he was. I was working with Steve Austin. And so it was a good place to break in for sure.
Well, that was the funny thing about CBS in the 90s is those long-running shows like that, they had a plethora of guest stars that were like, iconic people. Like, I mean, if you were able to work on one of those programs, you were probably working, like you said, with a Lee Majors or any yep. number of like Hollywood elites from their day.
I remember I worked with Gavin McLeod, Meryl Steubing, Captain Steubing from The Love Boat, you know? And I was thinking, this is just crazy. And he was kind of playing this hard guy, you know, and I was like, you're not really that guy, but I get it. Okay. The funny thing is when you went into audition, there's a mark on the doorway in the casting office and it's a height mark and it's Chuck's height mark. And if you're too tall for that, you're not getting cast. You know, I don't know how like Tex Cobb ever got on that show, but I guess
they couldn't just put Chuck on a couple of phone books or something?
He probably at some point he just said enough. And it was, you know, it was shot class after shot class being cast because it was there. You were definitely in. And he knew the mark. You'd see actors walk in. They'd be, you know, stooping down.
I'm not 6 foot tall.
Yeah, it's the opposite of getting on a roller coaster.
Right.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, it was great. So, yeah, I'm grateful for those experiences. I don't think they're still, well, I haven't had them still out there, and the casting process is so different now, but man, it was a good time. You know, the other thing is that show was a well-oiled machine, and they'd be done by 3 o'clock. I mean, we get crack-a-lacking at 6 a.m. and be done and ready to golf by 3. I mean, that's how things operated back then.
Did you golf with Chuck Norris?
I did not golf with Chuck Norris, but I did golf with Lee Majors, which was fun.
Nice. Well, and that was in the day too, where wasn't every season like 26 episodes back then?
Yeah. I mean, it was, and to be honest, they were paid great. I mean, that was good pay back then, and so they were CBS's darling. They were doing really well, and Chuck kept CBS afloat with that show. And man, they made a lot of money, and we shot it in Dallas, and yeah, it was great.
And that's amazing that you said too that Chuck Norris was so gracious at that time too, because I mean, that guy had, up until that point, and even, you know, during that show's run, the guy had a storied career. I mean, it's Chuck Norris, for shit's sake. So for him to be that welcoming to everybody and being, you know, that nice is pretty amazing for a guy.
Chuck is like
part of his career.
So in a small town that I lived in growing up as a kid, Moorhead, Kentucky, there was a little martial arts school there, and Chuck visited that school twice a year.
Wow.
Yeah, twice a year he would come by and visit the classes, and he would teach a class while he was there. It was the coolest thing, and like everybody was freaking out all the time because it's fucking Chuck Norris. I mean, this is the guy that, like, you know, he fought Bruce Lee. Like, everybody was enamored with him at the time.
I mean, we held him in really high regard, and you know, and not just heads up, you probably already know, but they're doing another Walker. They're bringing it back.
Isn't that really? the kid from Supernatural, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think Jared.
Padalecki?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it on Quibi?
Well, that would only allow for one roundhouse in 7 seconds.
Yeah, every episode is just one roundhouse.
Yeah. So I don't know, but I'm excited for it. You know, And I hope they bring Chuck in to do something on it.
You'd almost have to, at least to pass the torch.
Lou, I heard a rumor, and I want to know if you can confirm it or not. I heard that Chuck Norris doesn't read books. He stares them down until he gets the information he wants.
Yeah, that's true. It's why he never knew his script. I don't think he ever really got the information that he wanted, but... So you would start the day with something like, so say you're in the teaser, which is the front of the show before the first commercial break, kind of setting the tone. And it would be something my character would be like, all right, wait a minute, Walker. Are you saying that you think I planted drugs on your partner and that you're going to find out that I did do it? You're going to bring me down? And his response would be, yep.
and then a Tide commercial.
Yeah. And so that's how it went. And you know what? I was paid and happy to be doing it. It was an honor.
That's amazing. Well, you've worked with a lot of different directors, and you were saying before that you don't get a lot of chances to be super collaborative with your character, with your director. I mean, you've worked with Quentin Tarantino, you worked with Rob Zombie, with all of the different directors that you've worked with, is there anything specific when you get to a set that you appreciate more than other things? Like, is there certain things that make you happier as an actor showing up for the day or for the week that make it easier for you?
You know, you come to find out what that is. And I guess my favorite thing is the exact thing that those men that you're speaking of, and women too, they all have a pretty clear idea of what they want. That goes so far in making the day an easier day. Man, if you spend all of your day chasing your tail, trying to find out what somebody wants, particularly when they're not sure, like, I don't know, maybe it goes like this, what do you think? And now you're trying to come up with, you know, or what you're doing isn't in sync with what someone else is doing. You know, Rob is really great, Rob Zombie, at knowing what he wants and wanting what he knows. And there's not really any gray area there. And even if a take fails, somebody flubs the line, he will reset the camera. He just said, well, it wasn't meant to be. Let's reset the camera, different lens, shoot it a different way. Let's knock it out again. You know, he really has a good sense of storytelling, essentially. And Tarantino is the same way. He knows exactly how it's going to sing and sound and look and light and the pacing of it. And he can, you know, his personality embodies the energy of the scene on the set. I mean, he's crazy. Another guy was Tony Scott, who I did three movies for. He was incredible, his energy and knowing what he needed in a scene. And it would be for him, it was like working with Willy Wonka. It was just amazing experience. It was so great. So I would say those things are, as I've come to be more experienced, I really appreciate a director who has a sense of what they're looking to do, and understands if they can or can't pull it off. Those guys that we just referenced have a lot of resource. So now we've got some young guys that don't, you know, they're doing indies and they don't have the same resource in finances or man hours. And they figure out, well, we can't entirely do what we'd like. So I did a movie called The Endless for these two young fellas, Justin Benson.
Oh, that movie is so good.
Yeah, right. These two you recognize right away. Okay, these guys, they got some snap. They know what they got going on. And so I'm acutely aware of that. And being a good director, essentially, if we're just doing math, we can switch the word to selector. Okay. So you got to be a good selector. I've got to select the right cast. I've got to select the right guy to do this job. Cast him. He should be in the blue shirt, not the red shirt. And now I'm in the editing booth and I want that take. Okay. So at this point, you gotta be good at that. And then outside of that, I think there's a compassion to everybody on the set, regardless of what your place on the set is, just knowing what everyone's going through on the day and still keeping in mind what you need, because you're birthing this child, this film, and it's first and foremost, regardless. And so I recognize a certain compassion and understanding and the feel of what is going on with everybody. The really good directors have that. So I look for all those things when I go show up to set.
I think that all of the people that you mentioned in that all are write their own stuff. I know that Quentin and Rob Zombie do for sure. Do you think that maybe like less hands in the cookie jar? Like typically like a song is better if it has less songwriters. Maybe like that singular vision.
For sure. You know, what's interesting is the two guys. So you take those two, Rob and Quentin, and then you take these other two, which are Tony Scott and Gore Verbinski, who I've worked with. He did the Pirates and I did Lone Ranger and Rango with him. They use writers, and Tony had a lot of reverence for the writer. So in other words, if he was going to change something, he would bring the writer in to make sure it was okay. But it wasn't to like, I would like to change something. It was more, I'm going to change something and I want you to do it. Make it work. Make it to me. Yeah. And so they had interesting points of view with writers. And as you said, Quentin writes on the spot. So I was amazed. One thing when you're on his set, you have to be ready. Any given moment, he carries a yellow legal notepad. He could scribble out a monologue and ask you to do it in the moment. And if you're not prepared to do that, it could be lost. You know, let me go back to my trailer and work on it. No. Then the moment's lost. Doesn't matter. So you have to be kind of you know, ready to rock any given moment. It's a gunfight. And so he's always writing and it's always
telling. No more monologue for you. You're cut right out of the movie.
Exactly. Yeah. He just, you know, mows through it. His presence is so large on a set, even with DiCaprio's and Pitt's and Pacino's. Well, Pacino stands out anywhere he goes. He's amazing. But it was really interesting to watch Quentin Tarantino work with the process of a Brad Pitt, who's a little more insular, and then a DiCaprio, who's you know, working from the outside in, a little bigger. And Quentin essentially is looking for peacocks, you know, people to stand out. And if you're a real subtle actor, that's not really your jam. You know, you don't make it a practice to do that. So you kind of have to get up to that speed to go out and play on his court. So that's really interesting, but it works so well. And he's in absolute command of the whole thing.
So guys, Limbo is the movie. It's going to be out August 8th on video on demand and DVD. Lou's in it. There's a bunch of people in it. It's labeled a horror comedy. I would not say it's a horror movie, but that's what they're calling it. So I'll tell you it's a horror movie.
It's a hard one to paint. For me, it's a suspense thriller. You know, I feel like we could have landed some of the dark comedy perhaps a little bit better with, you know, comedy is a rehearsed, a real fine, refined effort. But you know, I think there's some comedy there. But for the most part, it's the twist.
You could maybe say supernatural, supernatural comedy.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean,
yeah.
Angels
for sure.
And we've stuff, some, right? Yeah. It's hard to peg, Lou.
We've got some demons. You know, Mark is a guy that really works in his imagination. I really appreciate his work. And you know, again, small film, not a lot of rehearsal, but it looks great. It's lensed well. We're stuck in a room and the shot composition keeps moving. I feel like that is, you know, half the battle to not be just, you know, talking heads and to give it, you know, something at the end that surprises you. So I would love for it to find a home on Netflix so it gets a lot of eyeballs. We're in a little bit of purgatory right now, a little limbo right now in the world. So it seems to be a appropriate fit.
Real quick, Lou, I wouldn't expect you to remember this just because of the nature of the venue, but we actually met last year at Flashback Weekend in Chicago.
Okay.
With this pandemic, do you miss the convention? I know, because we're like in the thick of convention season
did
right now. Do you miss it?
Did you give me a T-shirt?
I didn't. I should have.
I felt like you had a T-shirt. I'm not sure.
Lou, I'll tell you what. He's a white guy in cargo shorts, so you probably couldn't miss him.
I probably had a drink in my hand walking through the convention floor by myself. That was probably
I would think that I do remember. There's probably only 1,000 pair of cargo shorts worn in Chicago that summer. You know, I miss the conventions. I miss one of the reasons that I like, or the reason that I like the convention, is to go out and mix in with the audience and to get a real, you know, sense of the genre's fan base. It's incredible. It's always been an entirely loyal, well-educated, really supportive fan base. And they come out, they turn out in droves. They're always interested. They know the material. They know your body of work. It's great. So yes, I miss that very much. I have not done anything virtual just yet as one of these virtual conventions. I mean, guys, this is the San Diego Comic-Con week.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And I think they're doing a virtual effort towards it. There's something obviously that's amiss with that, but you know, we're finding out a way to make it work. I mean, your podcast is very serviceable. Somehow you've had to, you know, be a service to folks out there that aren't getting out and about, aren't going to the movie theaters, can't, you know, you're discovering small films for them, for your audience. So we're trying to find ways to all help each other and support each other. But yes, I entirely miss. I've had several canceled, obviously. I think the first one that I'm thinking that's going to happen is in Kentucky. I want to say Lexington. Is that Scarefest in October?
I think that sounds right. Scarefest, I think, is in Kentucky.
That's kind of the one I'm targeting that might happen. Not sure why. You guys have any? You think something happened in September?
Yeah, it gets canceled.
Nothing. There's something crazy that happens every day, Lou. So
yeah.
I mean, I there's probably going to be lots of bad things that happen in September.
Not that I would love for this to get back to normal, but I'm
making zero predictions about the rest of this year.
Okay, because you've been wrong for the months run of the year.
Yeah, exactly.
I hope poor Bridger gets out of
disasters, but the stock market is the best that it's ever been. It's a really nothing makes sense right now. It's nothing bizarre. Makes sense.
But you know what does make sense? Watch Limbo when it comes out.
Yeah,
August 8th. On DVD and video on demand. Lou, you're on I know you're on Twitter, Lou Temple Actor. Is that your handle on everything else too?
No, actually, no. And we got Twitter. You know, when you signed with The Walking Dead, they made you do a Twitter account, and we thought it was silly at the time. Now it's our lifeline.
Right.
But so I kind of just flippantly threw out this, you know, handle, Lou Temple Actor. That'll work. And I just wished I'd have just left it at Lou Temple. But I'm Lou Temple on Instagram. And IMDb, you can keep up with what's going on. Limbo's out there. I've got a pirate movie coming out in the fall that's very similar to Goonies, with Malcolm McDowell. It's a Time Crafters, the Secret of Pirate's Cove. And so that'll be fun. I have a Patreon subscription website where we do storytelling, where we write scripts. We actually have written a couple scripts on it with the folks that join so they can get engaged. And we read Lonesome Dove on it. Every day we did a chapter. That's 102 chapters of Larry McMurtry's Finest Words, which was beautiful. And so Patreon's called The Texican, Lou Temple, The Texican. And yeah, thank you, man. That's cool. You guys are great to have. And are you, are you Missouri?
I'm Missouri. Travis is Wisconsin and Matt is New Hampshire. So we're all over the place.
We got a wide swath.
Yeah, that is really, that's quite diverse. Well, I'm just thankful every one of those cities has a Trader Joe's. Trader Jose, okay?
Had it right down for some taco shells.
Can I just say about taco shells, guys, because I ruined some this afternoon. That's why I got into the conversation and it piqued my interest immediately because I fumbled with those Trader Joe taco shells.
They're not great, Lou. The Trader Joe's ones, no.
What I like to do is just heat them up a little bit, but if you heat them up too much, they actually bake. And now you can't open them to put anything in them. And so it becomes taco salad instead of a taco.
Yeah, got to crush those.
Lou, I'll tell you, the best taco shells that you can get.
Taco Bell.
Old El Paso makes like a stand-in stuff that's like a cheese flavored. It has like the Cheetos cheese dust on it.
I got a box of those in my pantry right now.
Travis, those are great.
Can you do because what we like to do a lot of times is make our own double stuff. So you put the beans down on the soft shell and wrap it around the hard shell. Would that work with those old El Paso?
I don't know, Trevor. And there's probably some fancy ones. I'm talking about like garbage people stuff that you get at Walmart. As far as garbage people stuff you get at Walmart, those old El Paso cheese stand-in stuff. So that's the best you can get, Travis.
They can't be beat. That's great. Yeah. Well, I was very frustrated. I lost my mind today over these brittle taco shells breaking for lunch. It's Taco Tuesday, and I friggin' fumbled, man. And so I heard you guys talking about – and they were Trader Joe. And I was like, oh, this is not going to go well today. But it did. I'm thankful.
Sorry. We're sorry to start that off on a negative front for you.
Well, I will Miller High Life it into a good front. How about that? Champagne perfect. Appears.
That's and, perfect.
And I'm thankful to I'm thankful you guys had me. It's very cool.
Thanks, Lou, bud.
Thanks a lot, Lou. This is great.
Yeah, when that pirate movie comes out, we'll do it again.
Anytime, just give me a shout. I'll be happy to join y'all.
Sounds good. Thanks, Lou.
Thanks a lot, buddy.
Okay. Good night. Good evening.
Travis, I like that.
Holy shit.
Lou Temple. He is good talk, right?
God. Lou Temple was great.
Travis, let me ask you. How long was Lou Temple there listening to me talk about Trader Joe's?
About 3-4 minutes.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, I answered it almost immediately when he started calling. It was, I think it was 26 after the hour.
Oh, Travis, why didn't you tell me?
No, we were in the middle of something. Got to talk about these taco shells. Lou was great. I'm super happy that we had him on. That was a great conversation. One of the best we've had in a long time.
Yeah. Matt, pick of the week.
My pick of the week. Oh God. I'm so unprepared. I'm not ready.
Travis, pick of the week. But,
okay.
No, let Matt go.
I think I'm going to pick, you know what? One of my favorite bands, when I was a kid, when I was younger, was A Day to Remember. And I really liked, their earlier work, but I stopped listening to them at some point. And, I've just started listening to some of the records that they put out in like the 2010s.
Yeah, that was my my oldest kid's favorite band for a while.
Fucking love them, man! Like they're really good. And I can't even imagine why I stopped listening to them. But
yeah, I think we saw them live in like took him to his first concert where that was his favorite. It was like 2015, I think, 2016, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Check them out. Like check out their newer stuff too, because it's fucking just as good as the older stuff. If you dropped off on A Day to Remember,
I don't think I've ever heard a Day to Remember song, Matt.
Yeah, you have.
I know you have. 100%.
Yeah. When he told me like he loved that band and we were going to see them at a festival, he played me some of their music on the way down there. I'm like, oh yeah, of course I know this.
Travis, play sing me a Day to Remember song.
You'd have to ask Matt. I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Okay, Travis, pick of the week.
Travis's pick. I had a pick of the week already to go from. I was under the weather.
Well, Travis, I'll tell you what. You're gonna have another shot to do a pick of the week pretty soon.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, I was under the weather. I had a pick of the week all set up, and until Sunday, when I started watching ESPN's The Last Dance on Netflix, and immediately that became my pick of the week. I watched 9 of the 10 hours on Sunday. It was fascinating.
This is Carmen Electra hiding behind the couch story.
When Michael Jordan came to get Dennis Rodman out of the hotel room because he was gone from practice for like 6 days. This shit, man, you could expand just that Dennis Rodman section into like another 5 hours. This thing was so fascinating. And to watch all of that amazing basketball super cut into like bite-sized chunks. Oh, it was like electrifying. And the stories behind the scenes, because I'm a child of the 80s, you know, early 90s. Michael Jordan was the biggest thing that there was when I was a kid. And I didn't even like basketball, really. But it became a time in the early 90s that everybody liked basketball because of what Michael Jordan did to that league. So to see this 10-hour behind the scenes of his career and of the championship Chicago Bulls was just... I couldn't take my eyes off of it. I was so mad that I couldn't watch the 10th hour because I was like drooling. I was just staring at the TV for 9 hours. But yeah, man, if I know what the hype is about now when everybody was psyched about it when it was on ESPN. If you have not watched it, and even if you're not like a huge fan of basketball, check out The Last Dance on ESPN. It is amazing.
The thing about that, and I'll tell you, when done correctly, like the use of music in video presentations is so good. And like when done bad, you notice it and you hate it. But I mean, like their use of music throughout that thing is spot on. Like, and I mean, it, like they picked like the perfect music for the perfect. And so whoever, like, I don't know what that job is, But whoever
like did, a music supervisor.
Yeah, whoever did that job, they did it right. Like that's one of the best things about The Sopranos is they were really good with music. But
oh, absolutely.
I noticed in this Michael Jordan series that was something that stood out to me is how fucking perfect their song choices were. Right. Guys, pick of the week. Pick of the week. Did I do the new Fiona Apple CD already? Did I do that as a pick of the week?
You brought it up because I don't think I've heard anybody talk about Fiona Apple CD except for you.
Oh, it came out digitally a couple months ago, and the CD came. I bought the CD. It arrived.
Did you
today
pre-order it
from Amazon? Yeah, so that's my pick of the week. If I did it before, that was it being on Spotify, but now it's the CD, so I did it twice.
Physical media, baby.
Travis, it is one song short of being a great album. Like,
oof. That's like Red Hot Chili Peppers, California Cation.
It's like OK Computer. There's a lot that you could say. Yeah. There's just like one song that sticks out to you. It's like, man, you shouldn't have included
so
this.
So close. Just take it out. Just make one less. Like Porcelain on California Cation was like, oh, no, guys. You totally fucked this CD up.
You don't like Porcelain?
Porcelain is terrible.
Oh, man. I actually like Porcelain.
Do you? Maybe if it was on By the Way, but not on California Cation.
Guys, we did it. Thanks. We'll do it again. I don't know when. Sometime. Things kind of got weird tonight. So who knows? But yeah, that's my mama. Bye. Thank you for listening to this installment of WFOD. Join us live every Tuesday night at 9, 8 central on strangelabel.com. And be sure to check out all the other great shows that station offers. You can download past episodes of our lengthy catalog or enjoy other premium content on our website found at wfodshow.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at WFODix. You can also follow Matt at The Lotus Cast, Travis at Produce Travis, or Drunk at DrunkardSTL on the Twitters. You can email any of us, Mike, Travis, Matt, or Drunk at WFODshow.com. You can give us a call when we're live or when we're not. The number there is 636-487-HAND. Special thanks, as always, to our Patreon sponsors, Brian Kranz and Liquid Lozenge. If you'd like to be a Patreon sponsor, it's patreon.com/WFODix. Be back next week. Thanks again. Goodbye. Don't follow all the
Lots of good stuff happening. It's going to be juicy. You'll see. All right. Bye for now. Take good care of yourself. Bye.